Guess I better get this recording here. Should have recorded everything up to this point, right?
Oh, a whole lot going on unless you were talking to yourself.
No, I was...
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Showtime! Just swinging in the breeze.
When you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are like a bat. For the show, man, go to like the DLNTS.org. And I see challenge on LinuxTech.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Hey, welcome to episode... I should have looked this up. Why didn't I look this up before I started the show? 1017 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have... Well, I know we have Joe.
Bitching and whining.
And I don't know whether we have Gorkon. Is your mic good?
I'm here.
Excellent. Good. Because I saw you popping in and out of the audio test.
Yeah, for some reason Manjaro was playing games with my headset tonight. I don't know why. Got to figure it out, though.
Well, hot off the heels of my excitement with Manjaro, Joel and Joe. I've been talking about it for months. I've been itching to do it. And I finally, the next day, slammed Slackware over here. Slackware 15 on a Dell laptop. And let me tell you. So.
Feels ancient, don't it?
Well, I'll get to that. But I guess, you know, in defense of ancientness, the installer has really not changed since I started using Slackware. It's the same thing.
Since the floppy days.
Right. So it's basically a four part process. Well, let's see. So it's very minimal Lilo screen that boots the installer. So what I had done is I downloaded the Slackware 15 DVD ISO and wrote that to a thumb drive or USB stick and then proceeded to do the installation off of that. And it's straightforward. You boot from Lilo, you get to a screen that asks you to choose your keyboard type and to test it out. And it's all ncurses based, I believe is what it is. So it's all text. And you choose that and you say, okay. Then it tells you you need to log in as root and then partition your drive using whatever partitioner software, you like F-disk or whatever. And then run setup. And setup will ask you a couple of questions, and it involves, okay, let me see if I can detect your partitions, and it looks, and it usually does a great job of picking up the partitions that you have created. I've never had it fail, and then it asks you, you know, which partition do you want to be the root partition, and then any other partitions, it says, you know, which one do you want to be swapped. Actually, that does swap first if you're doing swap, and then it asks you, which one do you want to make as your root? And then if there's anything else that says, do you want to add this? And then what's your mount point going to be on that? And then once that's finished, it asks you it goes to detect the installation media. It asks you, is it on CD or is it on a USB stick? So you tell it where your installation media is, and generally it's what you've booted off of. And then it finds everything and you have an option of installing everything. going through a, like, each package one by one, or you can do like a menu install, which you open up the categories and select whatever it is that you want to install. Once that's done, it flies through installing all the stuff. Then it does a setup where it asks you if you want to try out some screen fonts for the terminal. If you want to enable networking, what do you want to use for networking, and some services that you want to run on setup. And finally, oh, it asks you to set the password for the root administrator on the system. And then it's your bootloader, which by default Slackware uses Lilo. And then you restart and you're in Slackware. So I did what I always do, in that I burned I had my installation media. So I went in and saw that in the BIOS that, so this was running Ubuntu. So I went and saw in the BIOS that this is a secure boot UEFI system, and I have the option to turn off secure boot, which I always do because I don't really see the need for it, and I don't want to mess around with the hassle of it, and it hasn't bitten me in the ass yet, so knock on this cardboard over here. We'll continue that way. And then I set the boot order, usually out of convenience, to go to the device I want to boot the installation off of, so I don't have to catch whatever key press needs to be to get into the boot options. And I chose the legacy USB. Usually when I've done installations on UEFI system, I've always had the option to, you know, switch it over to legacy where I don't have to worry about any of that stuff. And anyway, so I chose the USB, and I got in there, and I got into Slackware. It went pretty smoothly. And then I went to format the partition the disk, and I deleted the partitions that were on there. There was a boot partition, a UEFI partition, and then the root partition. So where Ubuntu was installed. So I deleted everything, and then I was just going to create just one partition. I don't want to muck around with a separate home. I'm just going to create one partition. And I did that, and when it came time to, like, set the type, I didn't recognize any of the types. Like, I was like, wait a minute. Oh, wait, how did I do that? Yeah, I didn't recognize it. Yeah, that's it. I didn't recognize any of the types. And so I was like, I noticed that when I deleted the partitions that were on there, there was that UEFI partition. So I was like, well, that's weird because none of these types are what I expect it to be. So I rebooted the system and I went into the BIOS, and there wasn't an option to set the hard drive in there to legacy. It was UEFI only or whatever. So it was using the UEFI partitioning scheme, which I was not very familiar with. So I went over and looked up Slackware Linux install UEFI, and I found this page, which basically told me that I needed to have a boot partition, a UEFI partition, and then I can have any of the other partitions that I want. But, and there's specific sizes that you have to create, and that, it's all documented in this page. So, and the types that I actually need to set it to. So I was like, oh, okay, not a big deal. That makes sense. And I did that. And then I proceeded through the Slackware installation, and to install all the packages took like 15, 20 minutes, if that. It went really pretty fast. And then I configured the system and looked like I was ready to go. I said, drop Lilo on here, said, where do you want to start? I said, write that right to the Master Boot record like you're supposed to. Like, this is the only thing on the system. It had did recommend that I create a bootable USB stick in case I can't get into the system for some reason. At which I said, I don't need that, because if I really need to get back into the system, I could just boot off the installer. I know how to do that, all right? So, sure enough, it reboots, and it can't find any bootable partition. Right? So, it can't find an OS. Nothing to boot. So I went back into the setup and I was like, well, that's weird. And come to find out that, again, because I can't set it in legacy mode, it's in UEFI and I have to create all the partitions and do the UEFI setup for all that. So it can't just be like one root partition. It has to be set up in that manner so that it can actually boots. And sure enough, once I followed the instructions for doing all that, and I had gotten back to the point where I was ready to install the bootloader, and I'm not supposed to use Lilo. I'm supposed to use eLilo, which can handle UEFI. Lilo can't. And it's supposed to tell me that it's not going to install Lilo because it's not going to work. It's going to go right on the installing eLilo. And it wouldn't, it didn't. It just went to Lilo again. And no matter what I did, and I tried a couple of times or whatever.
For some reason, we lost sections of the audio at this point. Mumble cut everyone off. I think it had to do with someone, either mine or Joel's quality of service was checked. It wasn't mine when I looked, so I don't know. Maybe it was related to Joel's setup that it just kicked everybody off without any notification, or we ended up all separate from one another, and apparently nothing got recorded on my end, and so it was really odd, which makes me wonder if it was actually something on my system. But I had used this last week, and we didn't have any problems. And I know that Joel was having problems connecting and getting audio working prior to the show. So I don't know. Hopefully we'll work it out. But it was just really odd that we have these gaps, and this is the first of them. So I was talking about my difficulties with getting eLilo to execute or run in the setup process. Now, I do believe I summarize this again later, but I'll summarize it again now, and up to the point where I pick up with the next part of this that we actually have recorded, in that what it turned out was that because I was booting off the SD card in legacy mode, the installation was not picking up that it was on a UEFI system. And I dug around through the scripts and everything in the setup process on the SD card, and I wasn't able to figure out a way to kick that, just that part of the installation off easily. So I kind of went back, did some reading, and figured there has to be something I'm doing wrong. So when I went back into the BIOS and set the boot to use the UEFI SD card, that worked. And I did get to the point of being able to install Lilo or eLilo, and did eventually end up with a working system that I was able to just boot directly into. And it was great. And after that, I had elected to make sure that everything I had was up to date with the latest patches, using Slack package update. And that went really smoothly, but there was a new kernel. And I, of course, elected to install that new kernel, and I should have paid more attention to what it was telling me, in that after installing the new kernel, I had to run the make init rd script properly. And I thought it had done that during the installation process, but it didn't. And when I rebooted, because it added the new kernel and removed the old one, things weren't set up properly and it all kind of fell apart. So I wasn't able to boot into my system after that, which wasn't that big of an issue because I ran into this problem way back in my old Slackware days where I had done similar things before. And I thought it was just simply booting off the SD card again to do the installation, get in there, and I wasn't able to manually fix it or run eLilo, and largely because I didn't fully understand the setup of eLilo, and I probably could have fixed it had I done that. But my solution was to just go into the setup process again and install the original kernel packages and have it run through eLilo, and that fixed my problem and I was back up and running. But then I was adamant on getting that new kernel working, and I started to run into a little bit of issues of trying to reinstall the new kernel packages, and I wanted to keep the old one. So I was fiddling around with how to get both of those on there without removing the old one. So I needed to keep, essentially all I needed was the kernel images, the make init rd image, and the modules for that kernel. And after a bunch of toying around, I figured out how to get that all set up like that. And after a few iterations of rebooting, and having to go through that whole setup process because I kept messing up that eLilo configuration, two things occurred to me. The first was that the make init rd setup script that you run that's included with Slackware doesn't actually run make init rd. It gives you the command that you need to run, which idiot kept looking at this and saying, damn, I don't know, this run a lot faster than I remember when I executed the script, because it was simply just outputting what I needed to run instead of actually running it. So when I actually ran it, that command that it was telling me to run and all the switches and parameters that needed to be applied to it, then it created that new init rd script. So I had also come to discover that my understanding of eLilo was a little incorrect. Like with Lilo in the past, everything was like under the slash boot directory, and that's what it was currently. But there is another directory under there called, I think it's UEFI something, and then eLilo, and in there is the eLilo.conf, and you need to put the kernel image and the init rd image in there and all those stuff that you need to boot and reference them from there. So I had gotten that part set up with the old kernel as a backup instead of replacing it with the new one. And once I had that in place and was able to reboot and successfully get in using the old one, I was able to muck around with getting the new one working. And of course, that's where I found out that I, at that point, that I had not properly created the init rd. And so once I had that fixed and put in place, and I was up and running with eLilo, and everything was running smoothly, at which point I decided to then see about getting some additional software on here. And that's where I entered into doing Slack builds, and where this next part of the discussion, or my retelling of it, was messing around with Slack builds and how simple that was. That essentially, for a Slack build, you go to slackbuilds.org and you look for what it is that you want to install, and that then presents you with a page that's a write-up of what it is, and then there's a couple of scripts that you need to download. It also tells you on that page what the dependencies are, so you're responsible for handling the dependencies yourself, which means that you probably need to go over to those dependency Slack build pages and make sure that you install those. So down under at the end of that write-up about it, you're going to have usually two tarballs at least that you need to download. One is the actual Slack build tarball, and the other one is a link to the sources of the application that you would download. So you extract the Slack build tarball, you copy the source archive or move it into that build directory, you read the README and look through the package build to make sure it's, you know, doing what you expect it to do. And sometimes there's some options that you can change in there if you want. So it's always good to read both the Slack build page and the README and look at the files that it's using to do installation, because that's best practices. And then when you're ready, as the root user, you add the executable bit to the Slack build script, which is usually the application name. And in this case, I wanted to get pwsafe installed. So pwsafe.slackbuild is the Slack build script. You make that executable with chmod, and then you run that. And when it's finished, it's going to have built from source the application that you want, and we'll dump it out into the temp directory. So what I usually do then is I move that application tarball from the temp, or the package archive from the temp directory into that same build directory, so I have it, and then just an install package and that name, and it's, you're off to the races. And I kind of repeated that whole part of the process, and you're going to probably hear it again as it picks back up where I left off. Make that Slack build script in there executable and run it. And if you just run it without any switches, just do make package. And you, or no, you just do the Slack build dash slash Slack build. It's going to create that package in the temp directory. And then you just install it install package. Couldn't be any easier. And it worked really smoothly. I did, what did I do? I did mumble and proto buff and poco and pw safe. I'm gonna probably do Audacity next just to get it on there, but that was all done last, like, 2 days after the show, so I'm really
like a serious delay.
Oh yeah, you go ahead and speak.
For like 15 minutes. I was just going to ask if you've been talking that whole time, because we have not been able to hear you. We haven't been able to hear each other. Nothing.
So you didn't hear any of what I said?
No, ask Joel.
Is Joel there?
Now that I got, now I can hear you. This is weird.
Tell him we couldn't hear him for like the past 15, 20 minutes.
Could you hear each other?
No.
No. Now, in my case, what I ended up looking at was in the KDE sound panel, I looked at, and for some reason, my mumble was turned all the way down to nothing. And that's why I couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, but why would really that have changed? Why would that have changed after?
I don't know why it would change for a week.
Why couldn't I hear anything? I didn't make any changes to any settings. I closed out Mumble. I reopened it.
Well, you're on your phone too, right, Joe?
No, I am on my computer. I'm just using a headset.
That's weird.
I could not hear anything, and then all of a sudden you cut back in, Dan, and then Joel moved back over here.
Yep, and I reconnected and restarted and everything, which is, I'm like, the only thing I didn't do was read this. Oh, my God.
That is weird.
The perils of Lydix audio. It is strange.
Oh, you know what? Murph said I've been silent for like 10 minutes and they could only hear you, Joe.
Yep. That is even weirder.
Huh. I wonder. What did...
In the chat,
we can all hear each other now. Let's go. Maybe you've got your content, so you were messing with Slackware.
Wait, I did, because I went through the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Well, let me see the recording a second.
I wonder if your recording has anything. I got to juggle my schedule around.
I'm on the recording, which is really weird.
Yep.
So I. Well, basically,
it acted like when I had the quality of service stuff turned on the last time, but that's turned off. So
I don't know. That's really weird. Basically, what I said is, and I went through it, and I have it. It's on the recording. But basically, I did a Slackware 15 install on a UEFI system. And had originally set it to legacy boot off the USB drive. And because of that, I messed up the partitioning, not realizing that I need to do it a specific way for UEFI. Cause I'm used to just doing like legacy partitioning. So setting it to a legacy mode as opposed to UEF secure boot UEFI. But it wouldn't let me do that in this case. I could only set the hard drive to UEFI. It would not allow me to boot off it. It didn't have an option for putting it into legacy mode. And so because I was booting off off the USB stick in legacy mode, it wasn't picking up that it was a UEFI system for the purposes of installing the bootloader, eLilo. So it goes through like a whole different path, I guess, because I couldn't figure out how just to run that part of the installation and what I actually had to do to get it to go into eLilo at that point from where I was in the installation and the setup. And so I realized what I had to do and partition it properly for UEFI and set those partitions up with the right types and then use eLilo to do the installation. And then I ran into a series of problems when I updated my kernel, not realizing that things needed to be in certain places. I forgot to run the make init rd script is what ended up happening the first time. And then the second, since I couldn't get in there, I had to boot off the installation media just to install the old kernel to get it to be able to boot, and then ran into a whole bunch of problems, not realizing things need to be in specific places for eLilo, and I was thinking they need to be one place, and they actually need to be in a different place, and that I kept running into fucking up my bootloader because of that. But then I got it all figured out, fixed, and it's running beautifully, and it's a great, slick little Slackware system here. But Slackware is basic, vanilla packages. It's got KDE, XFCE 4, some other basic window managers, I think. But yeah, Blackbox is on here. Window Maker's on here. So there's other ones that you can boot into if you want to. I've tried both KDE Plasma and XFCE, and I've tried KDE Plasma on Wayland. Everything works great. If I was going to do a comparison between the Manjaro installation and Slackware, I mean, it's not really an apples-to-apples comparison, because you are
And that's what Slackware is, more hands-on in the process of administering, let alone setting it up. So you're going to need to know how to do stuff. And whereas Manjaro did a great job of just detecting what my system was and firing it off. Now, it would be more fair if I repeated the same process with Manjaro that I did with Slackware on this system, and I might have run into some of the same hiccups. But one thing that I came away with, you know, comparatively speaking, how long it actually took to do the installation once I, you know, knew what I kind of had to do, it took about the same amount of time, maybe a little longer for Slackware than the minimal install I did for Manjaro. But to be fair, I was getting from Manjaro, it was just a slimmed down XFCE session with the basics in there. With Slackware, when I did the full install, it was a full KDE XFCE installation with all the software that's included in Slackware, which had a fair bit more than the base install that was included in Manjaro. And then after that, it's just, you know, you're responsible for, if you want anything outside of what is included in basic Slackware, you're either going to have to go and compile it yourself or see whether it's available on slackbuilds.org. And I think there's another place maybe you can get Slackware packages. I don't remember, but it seems like the Slackware community kind of favors Slack builds. I believe so. So it sounds like, so it's good. Now, I wanted to get a little more hands-on with this system, but I just haven't been able to devote my time to it. One of the things that was wanted after at work, after we had moved all of our GKE applications over to Cloud Run, was instead of installing from source every time, so you can, what basically is when you deploy the application to Cloud Run, you have a choice either of doing a source install, which is basically it takes the, you pass in like the repo, the source code from the repo, and it could be like your GitHub repository or Google source repository, whatever. You send the sources up there to Cloud Run, it builds the application container and runs it, because you have to have a Docker build file in there. And so that means that anytime that we want to deploy to any given environment, it's going to have to copy the source up and then build the container and then launch that container. And it's not really that big of a deal for our development and staging environments, because once we merge our code in, we then automatically deploy it to development and staging. So it roughly takes about as long for those two. But when it comes time to deploy to production, it has to repeat that process. So before in GKE, we would just tell it what container to use. We'd have the container built and pushed up to Quay, and then it would pull the container down from Quay and execute it on the Kubernetes cluster or run it. And then also, one of the downsides to the source installation is that it's right now dependent completely on what is in the main branch that we're deploying from. And so if we need to, if somebody pushes out the current main branch to production, and there's a problem and you need to roll back, that means you got to revert that PR and then push that out again and do a source build to fix that problem. In the past, because we were doing containers, we could just pass it of the previous version to this, pull that old container, and you're right back in a matter of 30 seconds or so. So the idea was, the next phase of this is that we want to move it to either a container-based or a tag release type system where we could easily roll back because we have releases or whatever. So I picked up that ticket and decided to, you know, we already had a container-based approach and we already pushed it up to Quay as a registry. I don't see why we just can't return to that base approach, but one of the restrictions for, no, actually I think Cloud Run has to, if you're doing a container deployment, it has to be in Google Source, in Google Artifact Registry. So in the Google Container Registry. Since we're using Quay and that's whatever, or, no, I don't think, it was just easier that way. Let's go with that. Let's go with that. It was just easier that way. To do all that. Otherwise we'd have to do some, other setting up of configurations and stuff. Anyway, it was really easy. I decided that I was going to create a single artifact registry, kind of like, container registry, kind of like we do for Quay. Each application has its own container space, and then in there, when you push a container up to Quay, it, you see all the versions in there. So, whatever you've pushed to Quay will stay there until you delete it. And Artifact Container Registry, basically the same thing. It was pretty easy to set up using Terraform. The only thing that was a little confusing was that because I was using our production project to host the containers, the other projects, our development and staging environments, are on completely different projects. I had to make sure that I was setting the right permissions for the default accounts that were created to run Google Cloud Engine and do all that deploy. So that was a little confusing as to what the accounts were that I had to enable. And in fact, even the documentation didn't have it correct, if I recall, because once I did what the documentation had said, it still wasn't enough. There was another account that I had to give permission to. But once that was in place and I built the first container and pushed it to the Google Registry, it was just a matter of the, you know, over the next 2 days, setting up the Google Action script to be able to do all that. And man, within like a week, I had moved this over into back into a container, deployment method in Google Cloud Run with, over in the, Google, container registry. And I had also moved all our secrets that were used into the actual GitHub secrets. So we're out of Vault for all of this. So we're no longer in Vault for running the applications and we're no longer in Vault for deploying the applications. And you know, that was pretty slick. Now, what was a bummer, Joel? And this is what I did, is that I was mucking around a little bit with the Slackware system on Monday of last week, which was my daughter's first day back to school. And I had noticed right around 4 o'clock that the clothes weren't drying in the dryer again. And this is the third time I had run it through and it was still wet. And so there was no heat. The dryer was running and there was no heat. And, I figured, great, it blew something again. And, but what concerned me more than that is when I would turn it on, I would hear this popping and sometimes see sparks coming out of the back of the dryer. So I figured, well,
uh-oh.
Yeah, I think enough is enough with this dryer. I mean, we got this dryer from a neighbor who husband died and she got dementia, so they moved her up to the care facility up the street, and this dryer was sitting in her garage for at least 4 or 5 years, I think, or 3 or 4 years, and then it's,
you know what,
my
it's had
garage.
A good run, man.
Yeah, and so I was like, yeah, it's had a good run. So then I'm like, shit, I gotta get a dryer, because
that's probably easier than having someone come to fix it if you don't want to fix it yourself.
but you know, I was more concerned with the, with it sparking and the electricity
right,
flying
right,
out,
right,
the, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I think it's time. And I'm like, all right. So I'm like, I got to buy a new dryer. Let me see what is available. And so I looked around and I'm like, yeah, I really should wait to next payday, but I do have an emergency credit card with no balance on it. And so I called my wife up and I said, you know, this is what we got to do. And she's like, yeah, you're right. But before you do that, why don't you check with Paige? I think she's got a dryer that she's not using. And I'm like, well, yeah, there was an appliance sitting in her kitchen for the past ever since she moved in. I thought it was a dishwasher or something, but I called her up and she's like, yeah, I had this dryer that I've been trying to get rid of for months now.
So and she's like, come get it.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to come and get that dryer, 'cause ours just blew up. And I'm like, okay. She's like, yeah, just stop by the warehouse, pick up my key, and then head on over, and then you can get it, because she had to work till late that night. I'm
right,
like,
right.
Cool. So I go, and I yank this dryer out, and thank goodness it was Monday. Tuesday is garbage day, and it's bulk pickup mm-hmm. every week. And so I had to – this was like right before my daughter was getting home. I had to push the damn thing out of my basement, and that was a ball buster. And I have a dolly, but the dolly's tires are flat. So I went to pump the tires up, but they wouldn't like it. I got to get new tubes or something. It's just not holding. So I had to drag it across to the front of the yard, with that dolly with the flat tires. And then Lily got home. She wasn't too
that
late.
Was the washer.
Right.
And what?
It was a dryer or it was a washer?
Well, it was a dryer. This was a dryer, so it's not as heavy as a washer.
Right. All you have to do is throw that thing up over your shoulder and go for a walk with it.
Well, maybe you do that.
Right.
But anyway, so
he's a little younger than we are, Dan.
Yeah. I had to go get the key from Paige, which was like a 15-minute drive. Then I had to go to her place, which is another 15-minute drive, put the dryer back in my car. So it happened again where our audio went out while I was telling the story about replacing the dryer. So in a nutshell, I'll summarize it again in that I had gotten the dryer home and realized that it was when I went to go put it in, that the plug, because the cord for the dryer dryers don't come with them. You have to go out and buy them separately because there's different kind of connections in households. I guess it changed around the mid to late 80s or 90s or something, where it went from a 3-pole to a 4-pole, where they were actually having a separate line out for the ground to reduce the risk of electric shock that could happen. And the dryer that I had that we've been using had 3 poles and 3-prong connector into it. And this dryer had 4 poles and 4 prongs to connect in the setup. To which I was like, how am I going to do this now? 'Cause I went up and did some research at the price of an adapter, which was more expensive than obviously buying a new cord. So at some point I was like, all right, how is it that I can use the 3-pole on a, or 3-prong on a dryer that has 4-prong? And come to find out, it's simple. You can just, if the dryer you're working with has
a separate ground cord that comes out that you're supposed to connect that fourth wire to. You can just connect it back onto the dryer in the right place, that it will be just like it was with any dryer before the four poles. And then you just take your standard three prong connector and put it into the back, which I was psyched to do, and come to find out that the cord that was on this dryer was about as old as the dryer. And when I went to go hook it up, one of the connectors broke off, and I was like, I gotta bite the bullet and go out and buy another cord, which I slapped that on there. Now this one, interestingly enough, didn't have a separate cord coming out for ground. So the original four prong cord was just connected directly to, on the dryer. And so I just didn't need to connect that part. It was connected to the outside of the dryer, actually. Anyway, got that in. And it worked fine. And now I do not remember what came after all of that. Joel was talking, and now we're at Umbral. So I'll let it pick up from there.
Umbral, UMBREL.com, and you can, it runs on the Pi, but I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to sell boxes too, and it's a pretty neat looking home server box.
You know what?
Yep, Joel, you disappeared again.
Yeah, and I just ended up talking this whole time, and I don't know how this is going to work now, because if I couldn't hear you and you couldn't hear me. Why is that happening?
No clue. Joel thinks it might be your QoS.
And talk again, Dan.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing.
And now we can't hear him again.
I can hear him. You can't hear him.
Oh, my God.
What? Can you hear any of us?
I can hear Dan, and I can hear Joel.
I can hear you, Joe.
Okay. Joel, say something.
Joel's gone again.
I'm not hearing him say anything, but I'm not seeing him turn blue either, so I don't know what's going on there. Something's wrong with his server.
Wait, didn't we have this problem before, and wasn't it that you and I didn't have a problem, but when Joel was in the mix, it had to do with some QoS setting?
Yeah. He was thinking that your QoS is causing the problem now because he has his QoS turned off.
And QoS is under...
He said it was a setting in Mumble itself, so I'm assuming settings. Network.
I do not have quality of service turned on.
I did. I'm gonna, but that shouldn't have impacted you that way. Joel, are you there? You rejoined. Still can't hear you.
That is weird. I wonder what was picked up by the other system.
I don't know.
I can find out. I mean, well, I'd have to.
Murph, can you hear Joel?
Well, apparently Joel can't hear anybody.
One can hear him. raise the quality of the show.
Well, I feel like I've talked all freaking night, Joe. And even though you didn't hear me. So I guess, man, like, what's going on with you, sir?
With me, I was telling you about it earlier. It's just the crazy amount of meetings that I've had on the same dang topic. And the same people are making the same arguments over and over again about, you know, how releases should happen. And I have the documentation showing how releases are supposed to go. And I tell them what we expect from them. And instead of saying, okay, we'll do that, they want to argue and argue and argue and argue. And multiple hours per day. I mean, Friday, we had an almost four-hour-long meeting that my manager was in telling them these things that we had already told them, and they just don't want to hear.
Gosh, does that sound familiar?
Yeah. And so now I get to have a pre-meeting tomorrow where we're going to figure out the agenda. And tomorrow's meeting will be a whole lot easier because it'll just be my guys. Where we get to figure out the agenda for the Friday meeting where we're going to have the dev managers on there. Like, the managers of the managers are going to be on there. And we're going to explain this whole process to them and all the different types of releases again. And hopefully, my manager will also be on there. And hopefully this one guy that keeps trying to push and push and push and doesn't want to listen to anybody else, hopefully he'll start doing the exact same thing that he always does. And then he'll get told to shut the hell up.
There you go. Yeah, that's, I've been battling since probably last Thursday, Friday. A performance issue. What I ended up finding out was the client, before they came to the cloud, they used to run one of our products called Recruit, which basically admissions application is what it is. And they still had leftover trigger definitions, and we shut down this.
Okay, he cut out mid-sentence there.
That's because I just moved my finger off the push button.
Okay.
Yeah. But so anyway, we go in and I disabled the triggers. What I found out was there's this thing in our software called communication code. So like when you run something, it logs a code and then you can send an email based on that code essentially, right? So this trigger not working, well, actually being kind of partway there, partway not there, was causing issues. And what would happen is it would process one record and then stop. But the UI itself looked like it was still running. Wonderful. So I think between me and my teammates, we finally figured out what it is. And hopefully I can close that one tomorrow. But other than that, I see it's got this weekend is OLF, and I am going to go and see Murph's talk is at 11 a.m. on Saturday, so I'm going to try and get up, go early, and go down to I'm trying to remember where it is. I think it's at the Hilton. Yeah, it's at the Hilton, and then after his talk, probably head back down, and instead of having lunch down there, I'm probably going to have lunch at church because we're doing a car show and fish fry. So I'm going to be taking pictures. I'll have my drone with me, and we'll take pictures of all the cool cars and stuff at church. And they're raising the cars have to pay money. People coming to look at them don't. So they're paying like $15 a car, and that's all being raised for missions. So unfortunately, you know, no one asked me when to schedule the car show, so they schedule it the same weekend as OLF. And then next weekend, got to take Duke in for his annual visit. We'll have our kitty for a year now, so he's doing really good.
I'm glad to hear that. He's a happy cat now. Huh? Shot.
Oh yeah. Well, what's funny? I get these meat snicks over at Sam's Club. I think old Wisconsin ones. I think, and you have the refrigerator, right? So they're in my mini fridge. If I walk over to the mini fridge, grab those, open the fridge and grab those, he could be half the house away. He comes flying up the stairs. He's like, meat snack, meat snack, meat snack. And I tear him off a little piece and give him one. If I ever want him to come, that's usually my trick. But now, today I was messing with Umbral. I was talking with Joe about it when you cut out that one time, Dan. So it's basically a home server kind of deal. They're selling them for I think it's $5.99 for one with 2 terabytes. But you can install it on a Raspberry Pi. And then once you sign into it, you can actually install things like Heimdall, which is basically a bookmarking thing. LibreOffice runs through the Guacamole remote desktop. You ever mess with that, Dan?
What is it?
There's a Guacamole remote desktop, which basically lets you run X applications in a browser tab. So on this server. So I have Umbral uses this quite a bit, and you can install things like – you can install Firefox and then run that through a browser tab, which kind of sounds silly, but you can. And also Remina for Windows Remote Desktop and LibreOffice as well.
Huh.
And it also can install Trillium Notes. I don't know if you've ever messed with Trillium Notes. It's kind of a little bit like your own little wiki kind of thing, but not, because it's not at all, it's not wiki style, so you don't have to type in the code, you know. It's all what you see is what you get. It's pretty nifty, actually. You can sync it, like I have a client you can install on Linux. I installed it. You probably can do it on Windows, but I haven't tried it there yet. But and it'll synchronize from the desktop client to the server, which is pretty sweet. So I was kind of testing it out with my Raspberry Pi 4 to see if it's going to be worth the money to save up and get a new server, this server, to replace some of my cobbled together Open Media Vault stuff. The only thing I don't like is it doesn't support MB, which I really like MB for watching my DVD and Blu-ray rips. And that MB's nice because you can run it on the Raspberry Pi, but then you can also have it. There's clients for Roku, for iDevices, as well as on Android devices. So it's pretty slick, but. In the mobile world, we got a new, you know, the one I'm not as excited about, the new iPhone's coming. I think that event's September 12th. And then Google's is October 4th, and that's when they should be, I think that's when they're also releasing Android 14. So, I'm not running the beta because I only have one Android phone. So, kind of don't want to mess with my ability to get phone calls, if you know what I mean. Not that anybody calls me. It's funny how little I talk on that actual phone nowadays. And then September
23rd. All day on the dang phone.
Yeah. Well, I spend it on Zoom, so that's what I do. Same thing, only different, I guess, right?
Yeah, meetings all day.
But, yeah, I'm pretty fortunate. I don't have a lot of that. So we have one in the morning usually. And then unless I have to talk to clients, I usually don't. I try to stay off of it. Gives me lots of time to listen to podcasts. One thing I've been using quite a bit since I have the TV, like, right next to my desk is the Roku app will let you redirect the audio from the TV to your phone's headphones. So I'll have something on in the background with my earbuds in, you know, not something that would literally require you to sit there and watch the screen. You know, it's just something in the background, you know. Not news, just something streaming. It's better than using my tablet to do that. So,
so what?
And now, so I don't know. I wish DC was closer to you, Dan. Otherwise, I would come see you. But even if it was closer, it's one of those deals where you're always with your team. Even in the evening, you're going to dinner and stuff.
It's almost impossible to do anything.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you get back to your room about 10 o'clock, and even though you probably would normally stay up longer because you were on so long, you're like, all I want to do is go to bed.
See, it that not even that works. It's usually when I go up to DC, we get an Airbnb and there's like 4 or 5 right. of us at that place, so it's like we're together 24/7 for those days.
Oh, at least I got a room. Here's the best part. See, okay, there's 3 U.S. resources. Our Indian resources were going to try and come, but they couldn't get their visas in time. So they're working on making sure they can do it for next year. But so the one teammate that I have lives down in Jackson, Florida. He's the one with his wife has breast cancer, so he ain't driving. He's going to remote, all right? And then the guy that lives north of me in Michigan, he's going to drive his camper down. He's got a campsite. That's where he's going to stay. So he's not going to stay in the Sheraton like everybody else. But because I get the rental car, not that I actually want to drive in D.C. area, but you know how it goes. And Sunday we have a luau party thing at one of the manager's house. And what's kind of funny is some of these folks I have met in my past when I was at Columbia State Community College. A lot of them I've talked to on the phone, never met in person. So I never met my manager in person. I've always talked with her on the phone. And I've got this relationship for well over 10 years with her, even before I joined the company. So it's going to be a good time, but it's going to be an exhausting time too. So. And they're even having a potluck, so I'm like, damn, well, too bad my hotel doesn't have a stove and stuff, otherwise it'd bake something, but so I'm just going to go buy something and bring it. It's all I can do, really. But I think I'm at the Sheraton Reston, so it's right in the Reston Town Center. It's just like really close to Dulles Airport. And I think it has a mini fridge. I hope it does.
Is that what's important is a mini fridge so you can store your liquor in there?
More like I might pick up some Dr. Pepper and also some – I've really
He blames you for his not drinking anymore.
Diet Dr. Pepper. Definitely. Definitely. Last time I drank was when you kept feeding me drink tickets at OLF. You're like, here you go, Gorgon, have another beer. that was the one and only party OLF let you guys do the tickets from. But yeah, I was pretty drunk that day. But I've been enjoying my new cold brew coffee maker. The only thing I don't like is it does
mine too.
Mine takes about 24 hours.
Mine takes about 12 to 24, depending.
Yeah, I haven't tried it at the 12 mark yet, but I should. Although right now I'm using a medium roast until I use it all up, and then I've got a French roast to try in it next.
Your difference between mine and yours is yours cost like $100 and mine cost like...
No, it didn't cost anywhere near that. No, it wasn't anywhere near that. It's about $40.
Yours cost $40 and mine cost like $5.
I think I saw you the one you have.
But, it's called a pitcher and some filters.
Yeah, I saw the bags, the toddy bags. But
yeah.
The only thing is, now see, the package I got came with it. The whole thing was like $50, but it came with the cold brewer and like a concrete tray and pencil thing, like for your desk, so you can put stuff in it. And it also had a little vial of Bolivar bitters for putting in the coffee, which. I put it in the coffee, but the problem is I can't taste it over the coffee. I guess if I use a real light roast, it might be useful. I don't know. But, been enjoying that. I want to probably get some more coffee to put in it at the coffee festival. I might have to like knock my ass out at like 8 or 9 o'clock that night with my trazodone because my flight leaves at like 6 in the morning. Death Wish is delicious.
It is.
It's one of my favorite of the mass marketing kind of coffees. Although Viking, the Vite one they do is pretty good too. It's the same company that does that, I think.
They have a gingerbread one that's really good.
That's what I want to buy. I mean, that sounds delightful. A little bit of just plain half and half in it if you want some half and half.
Yeah,
stevia,
because
I like stevia.
I kind of have to mix the Death Wish a little bit. Got to mix it with some almond milk or something.
That
it is a little
make
strong.
Your heart, yeah, I was going to say, that crap will make your heart vibrate if you drink it too quick.
Right? You'll pull a Philip Fry. You'll travel through time using it. Yes, that was a Futurama reference, in case you weren't getting it.
Which is still running. I was surprised.
Oh, it's back on. It restarted.
It's still going. There's been gaps, but yes.
Yep.
I still have to watch the new stuff. I haven't caught up on it yet.
Neither have I.
What are you watching?
Right now, not much. Mostly nothing. Most of the time it's too hot to be in my garage, so I've gone inside and played a lot of Borderlands 2 again.
I have to look at, I think they recently added, if you have Nintendo Plus subscription to your Switch, you can play a lot of Nintendo 64 games, including Mario 64.
Actually, I've also been playing Diablo 2 Remastered.
Cool. There's a new arcade one-up that I'd really, really want to get, but it's about $500.
The multi one?
No, they brought it out an Atari 50th anniversary one.
With like all the Atari games in it?
Well, it has like both arcade and it has arcade 2600 and I believe some 7800 games, I think.
You know, I do occasionally kind of miss playing Asteroids on an arcade machine.
The one I want to play, I have to see if it's available somewhere. There was a lot of people don't remember Blasteroids, which was kind of like in the same set of games as Asteroids was. And that one had like all these interesting power-ups and you can fly between three different ships. So it would have like a real small, speedy, lightly armored ship. And then
Do not forget, medium one.
Do not forget,
it was color too. It wasn't line graphs.
A Blasteroid, yeah, correct. Blasteroids was color, yeah. And it had a head-to-head too, so there was a machine that had like one display on one side, another display on the other side. So I think you could fly and kill the other guy, I think. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I played it, but it's a great game. But yeah, that Blasteroids would be one I'd like to play. But their 50th anniversary one though, it has like Centipede, it has, I'll see if I can bring it up. And they also introduced the Atari 2600 Plus, which is a small, looks smaller than the original, but has HDMI out and will accept the standard Atari cartridges.
Dude, I really gotta say, man, have you played an Atari 2600 game recently?
Yes.
Doesn't it suck? No comment, huh? Yeah, I mean, like, it's good for like two or three minutes of nostalgia, right. But then you're like, I can't believe I'm wasting my time on this.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. Because let's face it, the sound was not great. And I will say, I play, like, on the 50th anniversary, I have the 50th anniversary cart for the Switch. And it does have the original Asteroids on it. But it's, the arcade ones are the ones I play a little bit more of from that era. Because let's face it, they were just better.
Yeah. I don't know, how much is that Atari 2600 thing or whatever it is going for?
It's up for pre-order for $120. Which ain't bad.
Again, the thing is, like, for a Pac-Man or a Slack build away, you could just pull down the ROMs and play them in an emulator. Right?
You'd have to build the controls, but yeah. So this 50th anniversary.
Or map the controls, but yeah. No, I get what you're saying with the emulator. That it is pretty cool as far as I'm concerned. But it's also kind of interesting to have the original hardware.
Original controls, yeah.
Well, just the original hardware in general, just for nostalgia purposes.
Right.
I find it interesting. But, you know, I wouldn't want to go nuts and, like, fill up my garage with various gaming systems. And so the emulator does help. Plus, you need quite a bit of adapters anymore to run the older ones, unless you also want to have an older TV plugged in.
Right, there's that. So, okay, so on the arcade one up, the 50th anniversary one.
The newer TVs don't do justice to a lot of the older games because they were built for, you know, that
640 by 480.
And not just the 640 by 480, but the way that
smaller than that, right? Oh, the lines too.
The line, yeah, the line. It wasn't dots. It was, you know, the overall picture. So.
Oh yeah, I've plugged in. I remember plugging in my Wii on a more modern TV, and I'm like, gosh, it's so blurry.
Yeah. A lot of things just look better on the older TVs.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot, that's considering, what, you know.
Right. Now, the Atari 50th anniversary arcade one-up, though, it doesn't. You don't have to buy the stand. It's built in, so it's built up so that you can stand up. An adult can stand up and play the damn thing. But it has Asteroids Deluxe, Asteroids Centipede, Crystal Castles, Gravatar, Liberator, Lunar Lander, Major Havoc, Millipede, Missile Command, Space Duel, Super Breakout, Tempest, and Aka-R, which I don't even remember that one. Those are all the arcade ones. And then
is that just what you were reading off, or does it come with like the entire 2600 library?
No, those are just the arcade ones. It has like 15 arcade games and then 50 2600 games. So it has
for $120.
No, this is 500.
This is the 500.
One, yeah, this is the one that looks like the like a little arcade system. So.
Again,
but the,
Pac-Man,
right,
or Slack Build Away from installing an emulator. What is it? MAME? There you go. Do it all. No, I'm sorry, go
different
ahead,
ones. There will be different ones depending on which system you're playing. MAME,
well, you just
for
need
the
to
arcade.
Get the engine. Yeah, you just need to get the engine for the MAME.
Right,
the
and the ROMs.
Yes,
and the ROMs can be
and the board
and the ROMs can be
things.
The more difficult to find in the software.
Yeah, I know.
Trust
I know.
Me, I know.
Yeah, I know too. I know.
Oh wait, that's right.
That's
what's right.
Sued for things exactly like that, but yeah, most of the ROMs that you could possibly want can be found in some kind of bulk fashion. On the
Internet
Archive.
Yeah. But, that's why I like I have the Namco arcade classics for the Switch. I have, the Atari 50th anniversary one for the Switch. I have some of the Capcom games. Like, I don't know if I have Street Fighter 2, which is, that was the best one, I think, Street Fighter 2. And I know Mortal Kombat's been ported to multiple things too, but I didn't like that one as much as the Street Fighter series. And I haven't got a new game for the Switch for a while yet. Need to.
What kind of game you interested in?
Well, that's the thing. I don't want something like Skyrim, which is a huge fucking time suck. So I have to look around. There's a few out there that I'm interested in. But that one, what's that new one Bethesda just released?
Starfield.
Yeah, that looks awesome.
Yeah.
Not my kind of
game. And the time suck. I don't have a good enough system to play that, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think it's out on Switch. It's on the
It's not. It's on PC and...
Is it on the consoles? Or is that...
I don't think so.
I really... I know it came out. I don't have much interest in that kind of game.
Actually, it says it's a console game.
Yeah, well, Xbox and Microsoft Windows. I don't think it's out on PlayStation.
Yeah, Xbox Series X, yeah. Yeah, I knew it was on PC because one of the guys I listened to was talking quite a bit about it. Now, last year was when they brought out the 50th anniversary cart. Had that. It's really good. It's the thing I like about that is they added a whole bunch of video and stuff to it as well. So, like, it has, like, video clips of Nolan Bushnell and the various people at Atari. Really interesting. How did they make fun games on very little hardware? Because, let's face it, the graphics were pretty low res. It had, what, maybe 4 sound channels, I think? If that. But the 2600 Plus, though, it can play 2600 games and 7800. It does come with like a cart with 15 different games on it. All of the Atari ones, nothing like the Activision stuff, no. And if you buy the paddles, they have the CX 60 plus paddles, which is a remake of the original paddle controllers. It comes with a cart with like 4 of the paddle games on it too. So, you know, right out of the box you have 10, and it has one of the CX 40 plus joysticks, which is the original Atari joystick. Just with the plus on it, you know, means it's the modern version of it. And it will accept any of the D-Dyne controllers. So, like, any of the, like, if you have the old Pro Line ones, it'll accept those. It'll accept the Sega Genesis gamepad because that uses the same connector and the same pinout. Bet you didn't know that. But, That to me, that's worth the $120. That's not too bad. And it's a lot damn sight easier to hook up to your TV. And it'll look better, too. It's not like it, like, you know, it'll have all the upscalers and all that it needs in it in order to make the game look decent on a modern TV. Unlike, my 20 or 800 XL. It's hooked up, but I think I'm going in via either composite or S-Video. I can't remember which, but it looks awful when you really think about it. It looked way better on a 13-inch TV that we used to have when I was in high school. It's like you trying to hook up your TI-99 to a modern TV. If you actually have it still.
I don't. I'm looking right at it. Box at it in, so it's not like set up.
And you don't even know if it works anymore, so.
good point.
Caps may be blown. Yeah, you gotta be careful with it too.
Yeah.
Well, that's the question. Power supply. Yeah, if I were to try it, I would probably go find a newer power supply and not use the original. Because your original could possibly short out the board and fry it if his caps are bad. But, or recap it. That, that machine actually had a lot of hardware that I didn't really know about when I was a kid, but I know about now. Like, it had a expansion box that you can buy for it. You know, and I never knew about it because we never had the money for that shit. Or the money for a floppy drive for my 800XL. Never had that. I think the Commodore had more floppy games than the Atari did. Oh, and I found a really cool mom and pop retro game store here called Tech and Gamer. I talked about that on my last Living in the Retro Arcade show. It had, like, in a frame, it was like, look like a Centipede cartridge, both a destroyed one and one in that looked like in the box. It had an ET cartridge, and then in the middle of it, it had a certificate from the city of Alamogordo, that's where they buried all the cartridges they had in stock when the crash happened. All the ET cards there.
And that's where you got it?
I buy it. But it was cool just hanging out talking to the guy, though. I think my grail retro PC would be if I can find one of the prototype Atari 1450 XLDs. That was going to be the sequel to the Atari 800XL, and it was going to have two built-in parallel-based floppy drives. So instead of a serial connection, it was a parallel connection. But what ended up stopping them from bringing it out was they couldn't figure out the how to make the parallel connection reliable. There are a few prototypes that have snuck out, and they have been in the multi-thousands of dollars. Which means I'm not buying it anytime soon. If you can actually find one.
That's crazy, man. When are you going to get one?
Never, probably.
Ooh.
Actually, take it back. It only had, well, it had slots for two, but I think it only was going to ship with one drive, which is enough.
It is extremely hot in this garage.
You're still above 90, huh?
Yep. All right. I'll talk to y'all later.
See ya.
All right, take it easy, man.
Tomorrow I got Tabata with my church group. You ever done Tabata, Dan?
I have no idea what that is.
Okay. It's a high-intensity interval training, so you do an exercise for 20 seconds, rest for 10, and do another exercise for 20 seconds. All right.
Okay.
So, like, we would do, like, one of the exercises was jumping jacks, which I suck at because I'm not coordinated. Can't seem to get my hands to move the right way. Push-ups, which I do a modified one because my knees suck. We did hammer curls, workout. We had the warm up was like with some, a hip band and therapy bands. And then, the last few exercises we did last week, we did a plank, which that about killed me. Planks suck. Oh. I could hold it for quite a while, but after a while my knees started to buckle, and I found it actually easier if I found like a chair or something to do like kind of like an elevated plank where my top half of my body was up higher, but I'm debating whether I want to go do my cardio tomorrow and that, or just do that. Because it's pretty intense when we do it.
Maybe you should just start. Was this the first time you're doing it? Or? Maybe. Do you feel you're up for throwing on?
The last cardio? Two times I did that, I did it in the morning, and then in the evening when after work is when we do the small group. So it's not too bad, because you know, they're really encouraging. That's the good thing, the people who are leading it. So if you have to make a change because you just can't do something, they're cool with that. Like for example, on the push-ups, I might do it girly style because I just can't. I'm a big dude. So even though I've lost in the like last 30 days, I lost about 12 pounds. So, I'm still to the point where, certain things just kill me. So like instead of doing a push up, like I'll push up off a wall or something, you know. That's a little bit easier on my knees. But the knees are kind of getting better too as I'm dropping weight and stuff. Like used to be I had to kind of go up the stairs kind of weird, but now I kind of go up kind of normal now. So it's helping, and I'm kind of watching, like, I'm not strict at it. I was logging all the food I ate, and that got to be a fucking pain in the ass, because, like, whenever you make something at home, you're like, how much did I put in? Because there's certain things I make that I don't use recipes for. Been grilling burgers or something. So, it's after 10 o'clock. We should get going. So, I'll be at OLF probably for just first half of Saturday, and that's about it. Just too much stuff happening at the same time.
Now, are you going with the freebie route? Is that it? Is it still free?
$10 route.
$10 route. There you go.
Yeah. Which is what used to be the freebie route. I think they're doing that to help control the numbers, too. Not that the numbers, the COVID numbers aren't bad in Ohio. I mean, they're up a little bit, but they're not, they're nowhere near where it was. And I'm not afraid about it. They're not doing any mask orders or anything like that. Although I might pick up a mask to stick in my backpack for my trip to DC, so. But anyway, let's go, and we'll see you guys next week. And you can play us out.
Is that time already?
Yes, it's 10:12. It's after 10.
Ay, ay, ay.
Time goes when you're dicking around with the audio.
All right, so he'll be heading off. Good luck to have a great time. And
yeah, I wish I could be there longer, but just got too much happening. I'm just hoping that we can get our washer back up and running by then, and we don't have to go wash clothes at the laundromat.
Well, yeah.
All we do though is we just wash them in the big, we'll put them all in the big washer, And we're only there about a half an hour, but then we come home and our dryer's been working all the time, so dry them at home. See you guys next week.
Yep. So, yeah, we're going to play this out. Here we go. Enjoy.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
My name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
You were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
And there we go.
Yeah, that's it. Alright.
Had Taco Bell tonight.
Yeah, Taco Bell, baby.
Probably eat out tomorrow too, just because I have to be at church at 6. So I'll probably order something and have it arrive like right at the end of my shift. But hopefully my long running ticket I can get closed tomorrow. We'll see how their performance goes. We'll give them a day. You know, and then at that point, if everything was okay, I'm going to close the case. I just got to think if I want to write a knowledge article on it, too. That's the harder part, is trying to write that so it prevents. If we write the knowledge article and we run into it again, then our other techs could not spend as long as I did to figure it out. But... Alright. I think it's time to shut her down and relax.
Is that it?
Yeah, I'm good.
Alright. Yeah, I think it's time.
Yeah, it's gonna be a mess editing it, probably.
we'll see.
Yeah. At least on my end, it was strange, cause what happened is when I would lose you, I checked the main like audio panel, and the application itself was actually not muted but turned down. It was weird. So I don't know whether it's that KDE just doesn't like Mumble, which is possible. I don't know.
I don't know either. All right,
we'll see you on Wednesday.
You
already played us out.
Oh, shit, I did.
So, see ya. Bye.
All right, take it easy. All right, I gotta stop recording. Murph will tell you I had a conversation.
Why is Murph in the listening booth again?
He was Murph. Hanging out here. He was hanging out here, and then he saw Gorkon show up, and he's like, fuck this, I'm out.
I do that. You know, I would do that, but then it'd just be you and Joel talking all the time.
So.
Murph! Thank you!
Hey, I gotta get things packed up to leave tomorrow for Ohio Linux Fest.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So I might be leaving early, so I'm gonna stay out of it today. So, catch yous next time.
With your talk, right? You're going to bring your talk?
You're going to bring it all.
I don't know if I'll bring it next time, but soon. I got to adjust it for no visuals.
Sounds good. Thank you, Murph.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Where did Joel go?
I guess he's probably having a problem. All right. What time is it? Fuck it. Let's get this. Wait, is it? No, wait. Come on. What?
It's 7:33.
That clock is off on that system. I got like 5 systems in front of me. And 1, I can't see the clock. 2 others, it's too small for me to read, or it's too far away. And the other one is like 10 minutes off. Man, I'll tell you. All right. We're recording everywhere. Let me get this ready to go. Did you have a good week so far?
Much, except today kind of sucked.
I'm sorry.
Well, you know, Monday I had an argument with someone too, but... And then tomorrow won't be as bad, but then Friday is going to suck. Argument about the release process over and over and over again. And with the QA team, why am I having to argue? I can understand maybe having the argument with the development team, but right. Why am I arguing with the QA team to tell them that they just can't randomly add crap to a release whenever they want to? You figure the quality assurance team would be all on board with keeping releases the way that they're supposed to.
Wait. Isn't the workflow supposed to be QA identify something and tickets that back to the development team? They fix it, QA
signs off and says everything's good,
yeah,
and sends it to us, and then we make the final approval on the release. Yes, that's the way that it's supposed to be. It's not,
why is
it's,
QA making changes?
QA is allowing changes. That's the whole thing.
Oh.
So dev team will say, oh, something's broke, and instead of, you know, having an incident or a quick release, they want to add things to the current release that aren't in the instructions at approval time, so that way that they don't have to do the paperwork to have another release and fix the things properly.
Joe. Why can't you see it from their perspective? Doing the paperwork is hard.
You think it doesn't make more paperwork for me? But if my manager tells me this is the way it is now, then you know what? He's the guy that makes sure I keep getting a paycheck.
But Joe, you doing paperwork isn't hard for them.
That's true.
There you go, see? Now I think we're all in agreement, right?
We're all in agreement that my approval is the final approval, and I don't care what you say.
And your manager backs you up on that.
That 100%. Oh, my manager won't even join the meetings anymore because of this one guy that just won't stop. I even tried to be nice and, like, you know, give a little bit of leeway when it comes to removing things from releases before, after approval, but before the window opens, just in case they find something that's broken, even though they should find that in testing before it makes it to the release. I was willing to give on that. That led to an hour conversation of him trying to get more things added to the whole exception process. And so I'm not going to give any leeway. It's either in there, if it's in there before I approve it, it's staying in there and they can work on the backup process.
Yeah.